could always tell her sound. Very warm sound.
Melba had a big, fat sound like a trombone player is supposed to sound. Melba would play a solo just like any of the other fellas that stand up to play one too. And she had the sound.
I don't think she was too concerned about being female. You know, she was just doing what she was taught to do and knew how to do very well.
Melba Liston arrived on the jazz scene as an artist to be reckoned with. She had something important to say, and she wasn't about to take no for an answer. It's that spirit and that extraordinary talent that continues to inspire today. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of NPR's Jazz Profiles, the late NEA jazz master, Melba Liston, a gifted trombonist, composer, and innovative arranger. Pianist Randy Weston.
You see, Melba, she has this wonderful way of creating beauty with great strength. Remind me of Ellington's orchestra. The music was so beautiful, at the same time, the music was very strong.
It's true.
Saxophonist Vi Red.
Melba has a most unusual gift in being able to play and write and arrange the way she does.
The Seventh Queen, a tune written and performed by pianist Randy Weston on his The Spirits of the Ancestors release. It was arranged by Melba Liston.
She's soulful. She's soulful, she's bluesy. She's not afraid to express herself through her music.
Saxophonist Faustina Dixon.
Melba loves the blues, and she loves expressing in slow tempos. A lot of people are really busy when they compose for arrange for big bands. But Melba likes to take her time, and she uses very close voicings. Not the normal first, third, and fifth, but she might use the first and the second. Those notes are very close together. And she likes to use different counterpoints. You might hear some similarities with Duke Ellington's music as far as putting the notes together.
As an arranger, Melba Liston always seems to create musical settings that almost wrap themselves around an artist, fully supporting and complementing their musical strengths. So it's no surprise that Melba was in demand as an arranger, and vocalists loved her.
Crazy love. People say I'm crazy in love, just a fool, sighing sighs to the stars above.
Dinah Washington with Melba Liston's arrangement of Crazy Love. Singers like Abby Lincoln, Billy Eckstein, Dakota Staton, and Betty Carter adored Melba's warm and often lush arrangements. She even wrote for Motown, arranging for hitmakers like Marvin Gaye and Kim Weston. But perhaps one of the best examples of Melba's work with vocalists is the 60s hit Love I Found You with Gloria Lynn.
Thank you. I never knew such tenderness, kisses like these.
Gloria Lynn and Love I Found You, arranged by Melba Liston. Melba Doretta Liston was born in the swinging jazz town of Kansas City, Missouri on January the 13th, 1926. The Liston family loved jazz, and the household was filled with its sounds. As an only child, music became a constant companion for Melba, and soon she was attempting to pick out her own tunes on the family piano. But it was truly love at first sight when Melba Liston saw her first trombone.
I was in grammar school, and my teacher wanted to start a band, and my mother took me to a music store, and I saw the trombone, and that was it. My mother bought it for me. She said, if you want it, I'll get it.
Melba's mother and grandfather heartily encouraged her musical leanings. After a few private lessons with an ineffective trombone teacher, Melba taught herself to play the horn. She played in school and in her church. But we are talking about the 1930s here, a time when the trombone was clearly not the kind of instrument that most girls even thought about playing. So how did people react to this young girl's unconventional choice?
I didn't care about people. You know, I don't know how they reacted, and I don't care now. So that's the end of that.
This is the music of Duke Ellington and his orchestra, and the boys get off now with a little rhythmic story about three blind mice.
By listening to the radio, Melba Liston maintained a steady diet of the popular big bands of the day, and she often played her trombone along with the broadcasts of Jimmy Lunsford, Benny Goodman, and Duke Ellington. In 1937, when Melba was 11, the Liston family moved to Los Angeles. It was an auspicious move, because in Los Angeles, Melba's music teachers recognized her talent and pushed her to develop her playing, songwriting, and arranging skills.
At that time, I think Melba was, she was ahead of all of us then. She's just, Melba's just always been an advanced musician, and we had to kind of struggle to keep up.
Alto saxophonist Vi Redd met Melba during their high school days, and one of Melba's main musical influences was Vi's aunt, Mrs. Alma Hightower. Now, Mrs. Hightower was a musical dynamo. She played drums and taught music to youngsters at a local recreation center. Mrs. Hightower made sure that her students were well-versed in all aspects of the music world.
You had to dance, you had to sing, you had to blow the horns, you had to do everything about show business.
She was very inventive, Mrs. Hightower, in terms of how she was going to do things. And she used to, when she was teaching us syncopation, she would bring fruit in and cut it into, you know, quarters and eighths, and to try to teach us how to read music, you know, and how syncopation went. And if you got it good, you got to eat the fruit. By that time, it was probably all grimy and everything. And Melba, she was excellent always.
And I think I was with her until I went to the Lincoln Theater.
This is the trumpet of Valeda Snow, a woman whose playing and singing captivated many during the 30s and 40s. Snow was just one of the many African-American stars who appeared at the Lincoln Theater, a prominent showcase for black performers in Los Angeles. Melba Liston also found her way to the Lincoln. She graduated from high school in 1942 and joined the trombone section of the Lincoln Theater Band. It was her first professional job. Bandleader Vardu Alai quickly discovered Melba's arranging skills and had her to write the charts for many of the theater's stars. One of those stars was Louis Armstrong. He was impressed by Melba, and he encouraged the teenager to perform her first solo in the Lincoln Theater Band. But the shy, soft-spoken trombonist has always been more interested in writing music than in playing and soloing.
I didn't want to solo. I didn't even desire to. No, I was not the solo type. But the girl in the band, so he got the solo.
She's a marvelous trombone player.
Veteran band leader Gerald Wilson. Gerald heard Melba play at the Lincoln Theater and was so taken by her that he asked her to join his band in the mid-40s.
She could play lead. She could also play good solos. If you want to hear solos, an early solo, you can hear her solos in 1946 in my band. She plays beautiful solo on the 1 o'clock jump.
Gerald Wilson is also a fine arranger and composer, and Melba soon became his assistant.
I encouraged her to write, to continue writing. I allowed her to be able to have access to what I was doing, because she used her as a copyist. I would show her how I voice things. I'm sure she must have picked up on it, because she does it, and she does a great job.
This is the Billie Holiday classic, Don't Explain. It was one of six songs that Melba Liston arranged for saxophonist Johnny Griffin's White Gardenia album, a loving tribute to Lady Day. Melba had worked with Billie Holiday during a short-lived tour that Gerald Wilson put together in 1949. In fact, it was through Gerald that Melba met many jazz greats, including trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie. Dizzy always knew a good musician when he heard one, so he asked Melba to join his New York-based big band in 1949. She stayed with the group for a couple of months, then returned to Los Angeles and continued to play. But Melba became discouraged by the demands of the jazz nightclub scene, and some men refused to hire her because she was a woman. So she took a job with the Los Angeles Board of Education in 1950.
I decided I would let the music go and get me a steady job. But that didn't last, and I just went back to music all the time.
Melba left the L.A. Board of Education in 1956 when Dizzy Gillespie asked her to join his new big band. The band was about to tour the Middle East and Asia for the State Department.
And he told me to write two or three arrangements and be ready when he called. And so I was writing the arrangements, and I was ready when he called.
Melba Liston was the only woman in the Gillespie band. Now, I wish I could tell you that she was immediately accepted by her male colleagues, but sexism reared its ugly head when some band members learned that Dizzy had hired a woman to arrange for the group, Melba's longtime friend and trumpeter, Clora Bryant.
The guys in the band was calling, you know, why are you going to get that B-I-T-C-H, you know, blah, 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 blah. Dizzy just set up, you know, just play the music. When she came back with the arrangement, he said, if you mess up, we'll know who's the MF in it. They couldn't play the music. They started messing up, and they shut her from then on. She was mama. She was one of the gang, because her arrangements, Melba didn't write easy.
The hardest music I ever played. No, Melba's music is beautiful to start with.
Drummer and former Gillespie band member, Charlie Person.
It's different because she's got a kind of another harmonic sense. But some of the harmonies are very close. There's a lot of dissonances, but the dissonances, as you know, they work, you know. So you may use certain notes as passing tones that may be dissonances, but then when they pass to the next chord, then it blossoms into something very beautiful.
Annie's Dance, composed and arranged by Melba Liston. It was recorded in 1956 by the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band. Coming up on NPR's Jazz Profiles, more about the life and music of the late Melba Liston. I'm Nancy Wilson. Find us on the web at npr.org and on the air from NPR, National Public Radio. It's Jazz Profiles from NPR. I'm Nancy Wilson, with more on the late Melba Liston. As an arranger, Melba could work a ballad. Her sensitive ballad settings were classic. One of the best examples of this is a song that became a runaway hit for the Dizzy Gillespie Band in 1957. Melba Liston's interpretation of Over the Rainbow.
When you have a person that can write like Melba Liston, it automatically sticks out.
Trombonist and former Gillespie band member, Al Gray.
Because what Melba had written, we felt so strong in our hearts. And it seemed like this was just recorded yesterday. That's how far advanced and ahead that Melba was.
Skies are blue. dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
The Dizzy Gillespie Big Band, with its 1957 hit, Over the Rainbow, arranged by Melba Liston and featuring Austin Cromer on vocals. Melba Liston's arranging and playing touched jazz fans and fellow musicians alike. One of them was pianist Randy Weston.
I went to Birdland one night. They had Gillespie Orchestra. And I looked up there and I saw this beautiful woman with this trombone. I said, who is that? And the first piece I heard Melba play was My Reverie. And she wrote the arrangements. And she was featured on trombone. And for me, it was incredible. Number one, I never heard a woman play a trombone before, not to mention jazz trombone, but she had this big sound. Finally, after the orchestra got through, I introduced myself to her and told her how much I enjoyed her arrangements, and that was it. From that moment up until now, we're inseparable. We started to work together first in 1958.
This is Little Niles, the title tune of Randy Weston and Melba Liston's first team effort. Little Niles was written by Randy and featured his piano in a sextet that included the trombone and the arrangements of Melba Liston.
And she made, out of the six of us, it was almost the sound of a big band. She has a way of writing to take a small group and make them sound very big. And that was our first collaboration.
Oh, I liked it very, very much. He gave me a new outlook on music and life and things. It was different from anything I had done before. And I loved it, you know.
Now, all the songs are waltzes. They're all in 3/4. Because I like that kind of rhythm, because it kind of just flows, you know, kind of like an African 3/4. And I had to push Melba to play on Earth Birth because the idea of each composition had to feature a particular instrument. But Melba didn't want a solo. But we got her the solo. And when you hear this recording, it's incredible.
Thank you. Melba Liston on Earth Birth from Randy Weston's 1958 Little Niles LP. Now, 1958 was a memorable year for Melba. It marked the beginning of a long, fruitful musical partnership with Randy Weston. And it was also the year that Melba Liston recorded her first album as a leader. The album, Melba and Her Bones, became the most serious showcase yet for her playing, composing, arranging, and band leadership. Melba, composed and arranged by Melba Liston, featuring a trombone summit of Melba, Benny Green, Al Gray, and Benny Powell, with Kenny Burrell on guitar, George Joyner on bass, and Charlie Persip on drums. And although the Melba and Her Bones album was well received, you have to wonder, why is this Melba Liston's only album as a session leader?
I don't know. I have written for damn near everybody, and conducted and played for and everything, but nobody has come to me for no action, and I haven't been to anybody. I guess I'm a little shy or something. I don't know.
Trumpeter Clora Bryant believes that women instrumentalists have never had the same recording opportunities as male players.
My personal opinion is that the men feel threatened, because I can't name you one instrumentalist that has had a hit record. Even back east, all those girls playing all that music on those instruments, do you see their names in downbeat and on the polls or whatever? No, but the singers and the piano players are. And Melba up there making it with the writing, composing, and playing with Dizzy, you would have thought that would have been her stepping stone.
I have a little theory about that.
Saxophonist Vi Red.
As long as a woman is sitting at a piano or sitting at an organ, it feels like you're relegated to a lesser position, but not so when you stand side by side with a man in jazz. You know, you stand up and you do your solo, you know, and you stand up and you do, and you stand right with him on the equal plane. It's often been more feminine for a woman to be a singer-entertainer type. You know, the cutie pie lady, I think it was more acceptable than having a, you know, a woman playing an instrument.
But Melba Liston did continue to be sought after by fellow musicians, women and men. Quincy Jones was one of them. In 1959, she and other members of the now-defunct Gillespie Band joined the Quincy Jones Orchestra. Once again, Melba became a key member of a big band. Just ahead on Jazz Profiles, more on the musical partnership of Randy Weston and the late Melba Liston.
Thank you.
It's Jazz Profiles from NPR. I'm Nancy Wilson, with more on the late NEA jazz master, Melba Liston. Melba Liston's arrangement of The Gypsy, a song written by saxophonist Phil Woods. Woods is featured here, along with Melba, in the Quincy Jones Band of the early 1960s.
Melba probably thinks in colors.
Saxophonist Faustina Dixon.
And when you think in colors, and you, like if you, when you blend and you put on clothes and you think in colors, imagine her bringing together sounds like that.
Well, I don't call them colors and all of that stuff. I mean, I like it and I write it. It's very simple. I like it and I write it, you know.
During the 60s, Melba Liston was in great demand as an arranger. Everyone wanted her. Drummers Elvin Jones and Art Blakey, trumpeters Clark Terry and Freddie Hubbard, and even legendary band leaders Count Basie and Duke Ellington asked Melba to write for them. Vibraphonist Milt Jackson.
Oh, she's great. And you know, a lot of females don't get the credit that they say that the men get, and then they should. Because there was no better writers than Melba and Mary Lou Williams, for another example. Women who were just great musically and as far as jazz was concerned.
Milt Jackson performing What's Your Story, Morning Glory, a song written by Melba's good friend and colleague, Mary Lou Williams. Melba wrote this arrangement in 1963. Yet, even as Melba worked with other artists, she continued to nourish her special musical relationship with Randy Weston. Randy explains how they collaborate.
Take a piece like High Fly. Okay, originally High Fly was like in medium tempo. And I play for Melba and she just would record what I'm doing. We would talk about what's the meaning of the song. So I said, well, okay, Melba, this song High Fly came out of a drum rhythm. It was a rhythm that was something like this. And from that rhythm, I put that rhythm on the piano. Then I added some chords to it. Okay, she's recorded what I've done. She would look at the chord and say, why don't you improvise a little bit on the theme? Just to hear how I would improvise on High Fly. Take that, and she'd listen to it over and over and over. Then she'd start to add her own chords, her own melodic ideas to the piece. After that, she writes the parts for the various instruments, and out comes a Melba Liston arrangement. But her arrangements are based basically on my piano arrangements of a composition. Now, the same piece, High Fly, now we do it as a ballad. We do it slow. So Melba would add more colors.
Melba Liston's latest setting of the Randy Weston classic, High Fly, recorded by Randy in 1995.
And it is at one point that Melba creates a line, a melody, based upon what I do, but it sounds like it's me, but it's not me, it's her. So somehow she has this wonderful quality of being able to get into my creative process and taking it someplace else, and always beautiful.
I just do the best I can. We just have a thing going. It's a rapport or something like that.
By the early 1970s, Randy Weston and Melba Liston had collaborated on six highly regarded albums. These works include Tanja, a release hailed by Downbeat magazine as one of the finest records of its day. Randy Weston's Jamaica East, arranged by Melba Liston on Randy's Tanja album in 1973. After this record was released, Melba explored new musical horizons. She was hired to teach music in the country of Jamaica. Melba loves to teach, and she soon headed a thriving jazz program for Caribbean musicians. Melba even recorded with reggae artists Bob Marley and Peter Tosh. But 5.5 years later, she was back in New York City and formed her own group, Melba Liston and Company. Melba Liston and Company from the early 1980s, performing When Ben Loves Lou, a composition Melba lovingly wrote for her mother, Louise. It featured Melba on trombone and Larry Smith on saxophone. But shortly after this song was recorded, Melba's life changed dramatically. Pianist Randy Weston.
I think it was 1985. She had this very bad stroke. She became paralyzed. And she was in the hospital. And it was really sad because she could no longer play trombone anymore. She was very ill. She was living in New York at that time. She moved to Los Angeles to stay with her mother and her family. And she wasn't writing anymore, just trying her best to recover her illness. So during this time, I wanted to do a recording called Spirits of Our Ancestors. So I started assembling the music. I started thinking about the musicians. Then I realized only one person can do these arrangements. It had to be Melba Liston, nobody else. So I went to see Melba. She was in the wheelchair, paralyzed on one side, been doing nothing. And I almost insulted her, almost. I said, "You got to do this. And nobody else on the planet Earth can do these arrangements but you, stroke or no stroke." Well, this great woman and her great aunt, Thelma, who's a computer specialist, taught her how to use a computer, and she started writing the music with her left hand.
My right side was all messed up, And so I had to do it or else quit writing. And I don't know a lot about the computer yet. I just know how to get my notes out. That's all. But I can do the notes, and that's all I'm interested in.
And she did the arrangements of Spirits of Our Ancestors, which was a tremendous recording, certainly a classic of my recordings. I wrote a piece for Dizzy Gillespie called African Sunrise. We got to the studio in New York, and it was very exciting moment for all of us. It was Melba's first writing after being very, very ill. She had to function with one side of her body, still paralyzed. And to see Dizzy and Melba together was something very, very, very special. And we did this incredible recording. And to me, it's one of Melba's best arrangements.
Randy Weston's African Sunrise, arranged by Melba Liston with Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet. It was recorded in 1991. 2 years later, Randy and Melba produced another critically acclaimed album, Volcano Blues. Charlie Persip was the drummer on the date.
I'll tell you, the thing that really impressed me on the date was Melba. We were running over this one of the pieces, and the musicians were having a bit of trouble getting it together. And she was sitting down, you know, and then we got to this part that she really wanted it to be correct. And she, you know, leaped up and started conducting it. She was moving the part of her body that was paralyzed. This goes to show you, man, how there's a medicinal quality to our music. She was able to move her body, that part of her body, enough to make a visual picture of what she wanted. And then she sat back down and went back to the position she was in before. It was amazing.
Volcano Blues, the title tune from Randy Weston and Melba Liston's joint 1993 release. In her final years, Melba Liston continued to push beyond her physical limitations, creating rich musical settings for a number of artists. Looking back over a long and productive career, how did Melba Liston want to be remembered?
I guess my writing is, that's all I can say. But I don't think that's gone as far as it has to go.
Melba's final collaboration with Randy Weston was in 1998. This Verve release called Kepra was named after the ancient Egyptian word meaning transformation. Her arrangements combine West African polyrhythms with brass and striking chord clusters in a spiritual and thought-provoking way. ¶¶ Melba Liston passed away in 1999 at the age of 73, just a few months after the release of Keppra. She will be remembered forever as a jazz pioneer, a formidable trombonist, and a brilliant composer and arranger. Our tribute to Melba Liston was originally written and produced by Sonia Williams. Thanks to Maxine Smith, Paul Connolly, Joan Merrill, Eugene Holly, and the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. Jazz Profiles was created by Tim Owens. Our producer is Saraya Muhammad. We had engineering help from Flan Williams and Patrick Murray at NPR West. Our technical director is Neil Tivolt. NPR's director of music is Benjamin Rowe. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio.
Discover more great jazz at NPR Music, including our new series, Live at the Village Vanguard, live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.